Good morning. I'm David Ellis. You know, dismissing an employee in Barbados in the private sector isn't as easy these days as it used to be. Thanks to the Employment Rights Act, you could end up paying a worker a considerable amount of money if you fail to stick to the required protocols and procedures. Not so, though, when a prime minister is firing members of his or her cabinet, as just happened in Barbados. One of Margaret Thatcher's former cabinet colleagues said, "We were all, at different times, antagonized by the way Margaret ran roughshod over cabinet. But outsiders do not appreciate fully the patronage power of a prime minister who won a general election in 1983 and then again in 1987. The only way you get into cabinet is if the prime minister decrees it. The only way you can move up from being Minister of Agriculture to Foreign Secretary is if the prime minister ordains it. The politician who keeps in favor is not being unprincipled. He or she has to recognize that the prime minister will decide," end of quote. Well, Prime Minister Mia Amor-Motley has exercised that power at a time when this country's economy is struggling to get up off the canvas after the body and head blows it has suffered from the coronavirus pandemic. From her very first interview on becoming Prime Minister, there was no escaping the size of her cabinet as an issue. 27 ministers and a host of advisors were widely regarded as just too big for Barbados, and especially at a time when the country was being asked to make significant sacrifices to save this country from economic collapse. The PM's response was that many hands made light work. Some people bought that explanation, others never did. Nevertheless, she's made a move that goes some way towards answering the call of those who wanted a smaller cabinet. Though the real issue is this: how much cheaper will it be to run this administration as a result? We just don't know the answer to that at this stage. What we do know is that in making this move, the issues confronting the Prime Minister are both political and economic. Politically, she has to be looking towards the next general election, and this requires that she appears to listen to the complaints of those who say the government must make some sacrifice, and she must seek to breathe new life into her administration to meet its agenda and the promises that have been made in the manifesto. After 2 years as Prime Minister, Ms. Motley has consolidated her hold on power within the Barbados Labour Party and the country as a whole, and she may well be strong enough now to make this move. However, we will watch to see how some key players respond. For instance, putting Trevor Prescott on the back bench could sharpen his tongue on his pet subject, the division between the haves and the have-nots. We wait also to see to what extent George Payne has been neutralized within the Barbados Labour Party, recognizing that he once appeared to carry considerable influence to sway some support for or against Ms. Motley. And what will be the reaction of Edmund Hinkson, who has been relieved of his portfolio? Given that she has insisted that we call her Mia Amor, we wait to see what loving gestures and balm to the soul she will apply to the politically wounded among her former cabinet colleagues. Those who may be disgruntled with their new assignments, and yes, those who may question the inclusion of the selected rather than the elected to ministerial power. Former British Prime Minister Harold Wilson said back in the 1960s, "A week is a long time in politics," and that has not changed. Let's see what the future brings. This is Down to Brass Tacks, the Friday edition. Michelle Brathwaite is my producer, and you can call us at 434-1790 or send your WhatsApp messages to 266-4862. Welcome to Down to Brass Tacks.
Good morning, David.
Yes, welcome.
Hello, David.
Yes, morning.
Yeah, there are just about three or so issues I would like to raise with you this morning. The first one pertains to the reshuffle. Now, after the 2018 election, we had Glenn Clark, a person who has served, who has held two portfolios in two awful administrations, and he was not given a ministerial appointment. Now, we have the reshuffle, and he has not been given a ministerial appointment. Now, I would like to know if there are still the two factions in the Barbados Labour Party, the Alfred's factor and the Mayo's Motley's factor.
No, and even if there were, let me hear, what difference would that make?
Well, he was one of the most experienced persons there after the 2018 election.
So
you had newcomers.
So in your judgment, it was automatic that because he was more experienced that he should get a cabinet pick?
Well, as the Prime Minister said, that more hands made light work.
Well, she didn't say that more experienced hands. She said more hands.
So you don't think an experienced person
That's a call that she has to make. You don't forget what we are dealing with here. We're talking about prime ministerial power. And ultimately, that person makes the determination as to how they want their cabinet to be made up.
So do the two factions still exist in the BLP?
Well, you can answer that question, because as I just asked you just now, and even if that happens, so what? What difference would that make?
It would appear that Clark would be a person in the offer section.
But on what basis have you come to that conclusion? Just because he was left out?
He wasn't given an amnesty.
So the opposition leader. So that automatically means that he is in a faction, has been left out. Is that enough evidence on which you can come to that conclusion? Or are you just trying to search for something to hang your hat on?
I'm not searching for anything.
Well, it sounds so to me. I mean, unless you can give me more than that, I must come to the conclusion that this is pure speculation that you're coming with.
All right. Now, it does not appear as though he and Payne will be contesting a next general election.
Okay. So now you come to another factor that could influence it.
Okay. Do we expect the two of them to approach the Governor General and oust Bishop Avery as opposition leader?
Oh, pure speculation again. Answer the question yourself, because I can't answer it.
Well, there might be people out there who might be able to answer it. I don't know.
Pure speculation. Okay. Or wishful thinking on your part.
Okay. This morning I heard Don Marshall speculating about whether there'll be an early general election. Do you have anything to say about that?
I didn't hear Don Marshall's assessment as to why. What was his conclusion? That there will be or there won't?
He said there would be. There would be an election before 2023.
This is now 2020, right?
Yeah.
And over the years, haven't we had the only outlier to this whole question of elections running right down to the wire would have been 2018 under the Frondell-Stewart administration. Various prime ministers have opted for various opportunities to say, well, look, let me strike while the iron is hot. Sometimes it has been driven by the state of the economy. When you realize that you are able to see that the economy is doing reasonably well. They don't take chances to wait until later, because sometimes you can lose that momentum. Sometimes it is the state of the opposition. You know, it all depends upon what is happening. I am not going to be so bold as to speculate as to whether there will be an early general election between now and when elections are constitutionally due. That's too high for me.
So really. What is the significance of proroguing Parliament in August?
Well, that's an interesting point. We wait to see. I suspect that this is largely about trying to restate the agenda, re-energize the government towards the next goal, which was ultimately be moving towards the general elections. But, you know, I also think that you also have to give people who have been given new assignments and that sort of thing a little bit of time to get things done. I don't believe that they've been given those assignments for no good reason. I suspect that those assignments are all targeted at the next major goal. If you are 2 years into your leadership in the country, I don't think that this is a bad time for the Prime Minister to make a move. What matters here is how she makes that move and how it impacts on the people who are touched by it. And what is their reaction? That is what matters. But I think the timing is quite appropriate.
No, you know, we have not had the 2020 budget as yet.
No, you're worried?
No, I'm not worried. But if
you know, you understand.
We're going to have a whole year without having
you
a budget.
But you understand the main reason for that. A lot, the situation has been quite fluid. With respect to COVID and all sort of, well, what do you think it was? You think that in the COVID situation we should have had one between March and now? Let me ask you realistically.
Because the COVID is here with us.
Okay.
We have to coexist with COVID. So every year now, because it's COVID, things are not going to allow to function.
No, but I think the way that you are analyzing this is consistent, for instance, with how President Trump attacks Dr. Fauci. He says he said this, but he forgets that this thing has been dynamic. When you were saying one thing in March, but things changed, so that in April and May, you would have had to modify your position. The same thing applies to this whole situation here. I mean, the government was really caught with a very difficult situation, trying to adjust and having to spend a lot of money to address the issues that arose over COVID. And I think any reasonable person looking at it would recognize that you couldn't just rush into doing any budget at that time, because it was so fluid. Things were changing, and changing rapidly.
So do you expect a budget for this year?
I expect that there will be some budget. I think the government, after it has been able to assess the COVID, post-COVID situation a little bit more, will definitely have to come with something. I mean, haven't we had budgets down late in the year and that sort of thing in the past? Without COVID? Understood.
All right, okay, David. Thanks a lot.
Thanks for calling.
Bye-bye.
Dr. Brastax, hello?
Hello?
Yes, hello.
Yes, I just like to ask a couple questions. For example, do people really believe that the only time the ministers knew about the change in Parliament is the same time that we, the general public, knew? Can you take, for instance, the new minister, newest minister, this is, what's her name again?
Lisa Cummings.
Lisa Cummings. Now, she obviously came and she was able to enunciate a plan for the tourism sector, which means that she wasn't told just now. She had time to think about it and to come before the public to say, well, this is what I would like to do as minister. I really don't believe that the other ministers only knew when we knew that they were going to be changes anything. Now, for example, the ministers are going, like Minister K, going to the Prime Minister's office. Obviously, you have to go in there with his feet, hit the ground running. So it's not like he just knew Friday or Thursday that he was going to be shifted. So sometimes I am really taken back at the public. And when they think, well, you know, these things are on plan, and the only body that knows these things would be the Prime Minister, and she doesn't share or take these people. For a leader to do something like that would say that you're not a leader at all. Because, you would just be setting it yourself, you know, for disquiet and discomfort among your people. I think that obviously she would have discussed these things with the parliamentary group, and they would have known, you know, what changes were coming.
I think you're stretching it a bit to say that she would have discussed it with the parliamentary group. I think at a minimum, you would expect that it would be discussed with the persons who have been affected so that they would be told something about it. Now, a lot depends upon how much notice was given. Basically, the tone of a conversation can be, look, I'm making some changes to the cabinet, and unfortunately, I'm going to have to part company with you. Sometimes a fellow or a person could be so stunned that they will say, but Prime Minister, you expect me to say, but I can't say anything. The Lord giveth and the Lord taketh away.
I understand that point. But I think the sort of leader that we have touted her to be.
You're reaching far to cover. You're speaking as though, you know, you can be certain that she would have touched all these bases in this detailed way.
But the public is speaking as if they are certain that she did
I wouldn't want to. I wouldn't speak like that. I wouldn't speak like that.
Listen, I really understand, right, that if we don't speak like that, this thing will have no fodder at all. So people have to say things that are outlandish, people have to say things that are far-fetched, that and use their imagination and stretch it to the limit, you know, for this thing to have fodder, for it to really have more discussion than a day or two in the public.
What do you think of the changes?
To be honest with you, I have not studied the changes, but for example, I think that Mr. Simmons, Kerry Simmons, have done a very good job overall for all years, shadowing tourism and then coming in as leader of tourism. I think he's done a fantastic job, you know, so I'm surprised that, you know, basically he was shifted, you know. I wouldn't say anything less than that. You know, but I'm not saying that he will not be as effective or even more effective in a new role, you know. So sometimes, you know, because like I said, I haven't studied them all. I have not looked at them all and I'm making an assessment. But so he's just one that I have followed over the years. And I think that he is an outstanding minister, you know, and he's shown tremendous courage. He's shown tremendous knowledge and, you know, about tourism and international business, you know, and I think he's shown a lot of leadership in those areas. So he's the only one that basically I was surprised of.
Look, I think that his combination is a very important combination. And look at the timing of it. The Minister of Energy, Small Business and Entrepreneurship. This is coming at a time when there are significant rumblings about the economic pie, who is getting it. You've heard right here on this program that a major initiative is being undertaken to have an energy cooperative. And people want to see more from this government as it relates to the development of small business and general entrepreneurship. So I think he carries a significant responsibility. I don't know that perhaps this is even more challenging than tourism, because I'll tell you this, tourism has a lot of infrastructure that is already there. And that infrastructure is driven largely by the private sector. All right? Mm-hmm. Now, in the tourism component as well, there is a need for mm-hmm. us to see more empowerment of people. All right?
Okay.
So having come from that section to this, I would believe that he would have a good understanding and appreciation of what is possible and what is needed overall. I think that's a significant appointment. And I also believe that there's a major vote of confidence has been demonstrated here in Ian Gooding-Edgell as a combination of Minister of Transport, Works and Water Resources. Now, this question looms large.
Diversity there is something else.
Pardon?
I mean, the diversity there of those portfolios is something else.
They're significant portfolios.
You know, they are significant.
They're some of the most troublesome portfolios in the country. And two of them have been combined. Transport, with all the issues with the buses and stuff, and water resources, with all the challenges that we have.
Exactly.
Okay.
You know, so I think the Prime Minister obviously have confidence in him, you know, to be able to manage. And I'm sure that he will have the necessary support, you know, that in terms of his parliamentary secretaries and so on. And, you know, going forward, I believe he's going to have tremendous support because, it's like you said, it's a tremendous responsibility.
But there's a question I have for you and others. Have we seen enough of the performance of these ministers to have been in a position to see what the Prime Minister sees?
That is a fair question. That is a very
fair
question.
I'm here to ask the questions.
I think that in some regards, perhaps, yes, in terms of what fulfilling their mandate, perhaps they have not reached the expectations, you know. And, you know, some have definitely, like I've mentioned, like Kerry Simmons, is quite obvious that, you know, he's a hard worker and, you know, very committed to the country as a whole. You know, I'm not saying that the others aren't, you know, so don't let somebody come and say that I'm saying that there's only one committed person to the country. Of course not. You know, I think that, you know, the Minister of Maritime Affairs, you know, Mr. Humphrey, I think, you know, as a young man, I think he's worked really hard and he's done really well, you know, in terms of, you know, protecting, you know, the environment around us and really trying to make sure that, you know, we get that, you know, the pie is shared amongst the people who deal in
Who's done that? You got some noise in the background. That's pretty noisy. I think it's a car or something.
Sorry, right, because I
it's not reversing or something.
Sorry, my door was open.
Okay.
Right now, I like you. I will wait and see how things happen. You know, I would not try to think that this is a change towards. You know, I think it's really far, really far reaching to think that, you know, elections will be called. You know, this is a plan or preparations for general election. I mean, that's a real fact.
I think it's a plan for the preparation for general elections, but I don't necessarily tie it to an early election. I think, I don't, you know, the timing of this is, look, to breathe some fresh life into the administration. She's had an opportunity to see the people who she believes are better suited to different areas, and therefore she's placed them there, and she will have to give them a little time to work.
I agree, and also, too, it is somewhat a restart for government. I'm not saying that government has stopped, but I think coming out of COVID, you know, there are tremendous challenges to really get the economy going again. You know, and I think the repositioning and so on of different portfolios, different persons, you know, is all tied to that. You know, and we're all standing internationally.
Thank you very much for your contribution.
Okay, thank you very much, David. Have a good day.
You do too. That's the latest score I have here in the third test, England versus West Indies. England 123-4. Down to brass tacks. Hello?
Good morning, sir.
Yeah,
I just want to respond to the caller that was saying that the because Glenn Clark was in the party for a very long time.
I don't know, but sorry, my apologies. I don't like how the sound, the phone sounding here. The previous call, and now you, it sounds as though there's an echo, but we'll try to work with it. Yes, you were saying?
Right. I was saying that the first caller was saying that because Frank Scott was in the party for a long time, you should have been given a portfolio. But sometimes, not because you're in the party for a very long time, but that in company, sometimes promotion because you were there for a long time for a company. So I don't think because that it means that because you were there for a long time that you should have a portfolio. Sometimes you need some people that may have the more knowledge about the job. That's my contribution, really.
I just thought that caller was being a little bit mischievous. I didn't see it in any other light. because he was trying to link it to some division within the political party right now and who is in the Owen Arthur faction. You know, it's interesting to look at what has happened since the last election. Owen Arthur has taken on major assignments. He is now chairman of LEAT, depending on where that is going, or was last chairman of LEAT, but more significantly, he is not as well as we would want him to be. And that's a significant change, along with the kind of relationship that he has now developed with, I dare say, the Prime Minister and the Barbados Labour Party, which is better. It is not that they have gone back together, but it is a better relationship than they have had in a long time. So I don't know that I would associate anything that is happening in there right now with this pro-Arthur faction versus the Mia Motley faction. I don't see any evidence of it. Hello? Welcome to Down to Brass Tacks.
Hi, good morning, David.
Yes, good morning.
Yes, Aidan Rogers here. I was just listening to your comment on some of the ministerial portfolios from the cabinet reshuffle.
Yes.
And I just thought I wanted to make a comment on the merger between small business and energy. And just to say that is a major positive paradigm shift in terms of ministerial portfolio, particularly given government stated energy policy and energy goals for 2030 and beyond. What that merger has effectively done is to streamline what had been one of the more challenging aspects of the supervision, both technical in terms of licensing and the regulation in terms of the remit of the FTC over the emerging alternative energy sector. Prior to this merger, we've effectively had a situation where the operations of the electricity sector were managed by two ministries. So you have a licensing regime that was previously under the Ministry of Energy and Water Resources, and you had the regulation of the electricity company being managed under the Ministry of Commerce through the Fair Trading Commission. And this has presented some significant challenges for persons in the renewable energy sector, even before the change in government. Because way back in 2016, I remember being part of a significant private sector stakeholder lobby, trying to lobby both Minister Boyce and Minister Innes to come to a meeting together where they could try and resolve what was a pricing issue in relation to the alternative energy sector. You would have seen within the last 2 years or so, there was some movement by this current government to try and address some of the issues. We would have had some recent amendments to the Fair Trading and Utilities Regulations Act, I think just shy of 2 weeks ago. And this move now with the reshuffle in terms of consolidating responsibility in a single minister is a major, major positive step. And I would like to say on behalf of the Barbados Renewable Energy Association, this has been a move that has been too long in coming. And really, this augurs well, at least in principle, because we now have to see how the performance translates into reality. But in principle, the merging of these portfolios now places the two key decision-making agencies with respect to the electricity sector under one line ministry. And that is significant because it has not ever happened before. the alternative energy sector, as we've tried to develop it, really is only about 10 years, if you go back to 2010 with the pilot program. So this now represents a major administrative shift where you've now start to ensure that there's greater ministerial harmony in terms of oversight and decision making. I mean, at some other stage, there's more I can say on this in detail, but I just wanted to weigh in to contextualize how important that merging ministerial portfolio is.
Okay, thank you very much, Aidan Rogers. Down to brass tacks. Hello.
Hello, Mr. Ellis. How are you
doing? Yes, welcome to the program.
Yes, thank you. Mr. Ellis, about the 12-month stamp legislation that they put in place now to allow persons to, after paying a fee, come here to work for 12 months. Now, the government had first had a minor issue there where the legislation was basically discriminatory against same-sex unions, same-sex marriages, and that was later clarified by the broadening of the term to say partner instead of man or woman and husband, wife, whatever. But wouldn't you have to then change other laws within Barbados to fully accommodate same-sex unions, same-sex marriages and stuff? Because the current Sexual Offences Act is a criminal offence to buggery. Buggery is criminalized under that act. And then there's also another act, the dealing with family, that defines a marriage as man and woman, husband and wife. So I was wondering, so for instance, you know, finance companies and doctors' offices and stuff, it might pose a challenge with same-sex couples trying to get the services of those if by law it is not yet fully legalized. And I was actually waiting also to hear Minister of Labor Colin Jordan's opinion on it, and I read his opinion in the Wednesday Advocate, and I was shocked that he agreed with the changes based on, you know, his being a Seventh-day Adventist. I was wondering if he was wearing his political hat or his Seventh-day Adventist hat. Now, the last thing, Mr. Ellis, is about the Attorney General, Honorable Dale Marshall. I'm actually quite surprised that he was able to retain his seat or his position as the Attorney General, because by his own standard that he set for Barbados back in 2017 as the Shadow Minister for the Attorney General's office, at that time he was in opposition, he had some very strong comments to make against the Attorney General, Adriel Baffi, at the time. This is actually documented in a Loop News article on the 23rd of August 2017. BLP calls for AG to go, gives him a failing grade. We are at a crisis situation, and as much as I am a politician, I believe that this is not something that we can wait until the next general election to get fixed. The Attorney General has failed us. He has failed the country. The time has come for the Prime Minister to relieve him of that responsibility, since I'm sure that he would not resign. This is the words of Dale Marshall in 2017, in August, when Barbados had 19 murders. Now, last year, 2020, Dale Marshall was the Attorney General, and he sat over about 50 murders, the highest murder rate ever in the history of Barbados. And then, sorry, last year, 2019. Now, in this year, 2020, mid-year, July comes before August, and 24 murders is more than 19. Yet again, he's still the Attorney General. So by his own standard, not by my standard or David Ellis' standard or Joanne Higgs' standard, by Dale Marshall's own standard, he has failed the people of Barbados. And I'm wondering why he's still the Attorney General of this country.
Yeah, I think a lot has to do with the fact that you're measuring him by his own standard and not by the standard of the Prime Minister of the day.
But then, according to his standard, remember, I just read to you that he said that if the he's sure that Adriel Baffi would not resign, so the Prime Minister should fire him. So, I mean, in this case, no, if the Prime Minister is not going to fire you, Dale Marshall, shouldn't you do the right thing and resign? Because we're going by your standard, Mr. Marshall. You see, this is why when you're in opposition, you have to be very, very careful with the things that you say, because in the future, they will come back to haunt you. Thank you, Mr. Ellis.
This is Down to Brass Tacks.
Hey, good morning.
Good morning.
I have a question I want you to answer for me. Because normally you let me talk and then you put the phone down. I want to ask you a question. What constitutes a good minister? When we get on the platform, when you get on the platform.
I really think that you should answer that. I'm not here.
I'm not here defining
who's a good minister and who's a bad minister.
But that's the thing. I'm not a fan of Westminster. I'm not a fan of this whole governance model. Never have been. But yet there are people who seem to understand it better than I do. And they come to the public and they say, he ain't doing a good job. This one doing a good job. I'm like, what it is about these guys that makes them do a good job or a bad job? Maybe you can help me because you've interviewed them for many, many years. And you've interviewed people who have also had opinions of what ministers do. So you tell me, because I know the guys who have been relieved of responsibility, a few of them, and they are good people. I mean, ain't got no problems with them. I know the ones who are still holding ministries, and they're good people too. But I can't tell the difference between one and the other. So I want to know what makes a good minister and what makes a bad minister. Perhaps you can help me, man. Come on. Tell me something that I don't know.
I prefer to listen to you because
you don't.
You have a degree of expertise. I mean, that I will never be able to achieve. So
no,
don't come to me asking me for no answers to no questions. Talk as you normally do. Talk.
I appreciate you trying to be facetious and stuff. And I actually do think I have a level of expertise.
Precisely.
That you don't have, and that's because I'm involved in something separate from just talking.
Precisely.
I see myself as a productive Barbadian. But only the people who are experts at talking, of which you are one, of whom you are one, because you guys...
I'm an expert at nothing.
You just spend your time
focusing on the issues of the day rather than focusing on me.
There you go. I'm focusing on people who make a living from image. I mean, they come to the public. Now, many ministers prefer not even to be seen in public. I mean, or they probably are seen by their constituents and stuff, but they're not always on TV making a show of something. I mean, the previous caller made some excellent points. And truth be told, let's be serious here. Before these guys become ministers, they really are not experts in any of the things that they claim to be experts in after they've won the election. I mean, there's not a single minister that I know in all the years that I've been actually, at least knowing of them, that can actually come and say, Art, I advise you to do A, B, C, and D, because they don't have the expertise. They're not experts in the areas of responsibility of... Well, once they put a doctor in charge of the hospital in health, and that was a big problem because they had all kinds of petty jealousies going on and so on. These guys are experts in virtually very small areas of endeavor, and yet they are being judged by the public as being good and bad. So maybe the public know. What is it that makes these guys good or what makes them bad? He wasn't doing a good job. I could never, ever get that understood. Truth be told, there are a lot of countries in the world that have ignored this Westminster thing, and they've bolted ahead in a hurry because it's not about popularity and making decisions that will not offend people and that kind of thing. It's about doing the right thing going forward. So unless a minister is prepared to come and say and do the right thing in public as opposed to say and do the popular thing, well, he can't be judged on being good or not. He's just being judged on doing what politicians do. I believe that when people are asked to step out of cabinet, they're asked beforehand because, none of them really are truly any better than the others. They're asked beforehand, I think, can you do this for me? And they say, for the good of the party, we'll step aside. There ain't no vindictiveness involved. These guys just do what they have to do for the good of the party, which in sometimes, the interests align with the good of Barbados. But there ain't nothing wrong with these people. Yes, they've been relieved of responsibility, but there's absolutely nothing wrong with them. If you could find fault with any of them, you could find fault with the ones that are in. And as for Dale Marshall, as the previous fellow has said, I mean, if there's a minister judged based basically on public image that has to be considered bad, Dale Marshall has to take the plaque for all of that. But he remains because it's for the same reason.
Thanks. The situation in Guyana continues to unfold, twist, and turn. The latest development is that the chief elections officer, Keith Lowenfield, was granted bail of $450,000, I believe that to be Guyana dollars, on three criminal charges relating to fraud, misconduct in office, and breach of the public's trust by providing results of the March 2nd elections, which he knows to be false. He appeared in a magistrate's court this morning and he wasn't required to plea to the indictable charges and was granted $150,000 bail on each charge. He is expected to reappear in court again on August 14th. The charges were filed privately on June 30th by a member of the People's Progressive Party. And at the conclusion of the case this morning, the attorney for, well, they made no comment really on what was happening. The attorneys made no public comment. The story that I have before me says that Lowenfield has been evading the authorities since the charges were filed on June 30th. He was initially slated to appear in court on July 3rd, but didn't show up after the court's bailiff was unable to serve the documents on him. And therefore, the magistrate instructed the authorities to ensure that he was served before July 24th, and he was finally served on Thursday, that's yesterday, at the GCOM Secretariat in Georgetown. So we continue to watch these developments because, you know, so much of what has happened since the elections on March the 2nd has ended up before the courts. Tomorrow, I believe, the appeal court is supposed to rule on a matter which some lawyers there are saying it has already ruled on that. So we wait to see what happens. This is Down to Brass Tacks.
Mr. Ellis?
Yes, sir.
A blessed day to you, sir.
Yes.
Yeah, and to the station, and a beautiful weekend. Health, happiness, and prosperity, and safety for our country as well. Mr. Ellis, today I want to make some observations on the reshuffling of the cabinet, or I don't really quite remember, I'm talking about the dismissal. Because there are those who don't want to or choose not to see it as dismissal. Because if you can kick a man like George Payne to the curb on the back bench, that can only be seen as a dismissal. That is no reshuffling as far as he's concerned. That's a dismissal, plain and straight. Because if you were moving from the front, you were taken from the front and put to the back. The back is the back. See? I'm concerned particularly about Mr. Payne, in that Mr. Payne is, in my view, one of the most boisterous and strong supporters of Ms. Motley. You would remember, Mr. Ellis, on the political platforms, even down in St. Andrew on the May Day, Mr. Payne said that Ms. Motley will be the best Prime Minister Barbados would ever have. And we need to support her. And you would also remember that even in Queen's Park, when they had a major meeting in the steel shed, Ms. Motley praised Mr. Payne and said she thanked him and she showered thanks on him over and over. And when something like this she could do something like this to him, it is a concern for me. Now, you will remember
that's
as well,
absolutely that, amazing.
But no,
for you to be concerned about a Barbados Labour Party member deeply? Let me hear this.
Now, when you were saying that, it means that you are conveniently forgetting.
What?
And I would like to think that your mind is still quite sound, because if you would have heard me say on more than one occasion that the Barbados Labour Party government is my government, because once you are the government of Barbados, you are my government, and I want to see you do well. Do you remember me ever saying that?
Well, I know you. That has been balanced and overbalanced by the kind of attack that you have taken to the Barbados Labour Party over many years. And therefore, forgive me if I'm in a state of shock.
Ms. Ellis, am I to take that as a yes or a no according to what I just asked you?
But I have given you the answer that I think you deserve.
I do not believe that you are a coward.
I am not seeking to be a coward. By telling you what I have said, I don't think I'm being cowardly.
But then,
because I am in a state of shock to hear you picking up for any member of this Barbados Labour Party cabinet.
It is obvious then that you did not remember or you choose not to remember what I had said.
It is highly irregular and unusual.
No, I have just given you facts, so then you should not say that. Because then you know, look, I remember even Ms. Maureen Holder when she was on the other program, when Mr. Payne had supported Ms. Morley, she even complimented and gave him the support as he did.
I'm going to say one thing in relation to your complaint, because it sounds like a complaint to me. You all need to be very cautious jumping to conclusions here. I will tell you this. All that glitters is not gold sometimes. People strike up all types of arrangements. Because a man is not in cabinet, it does not mean that he's not being taken care of. And at the end of the day, the big issue here is, have they cut the bill? It is one thing to come and give the impression to members of the public that you have saved the taxpayers of Barbados money when you can go and do something else that person can end up sometimes taking home far more money than what they had before. So I am saying to you, don't jump this gun. Try to get an appreciation first and foremost of where is that person likely to go. You see that the press asked these people for comments and nobody spoke? I don't know. I don't know what the answers are. But I, from experience, have learned to be cautious. So you sitting down here talking about, oh, the man get fired. Yeah, he get fired. But what is he going to be hired to do? I don't know.
Ms. Ellis, we can only speak on what has been presented to us.
We cannot only speak on what has been presented. What has been presented so far. But you are fully conscious of what I've just said. It is quite likely that you can move from one position to the next. You can go into something else altogether where you feel far more comfortable too.
Speculation, sir. Well, that is what you have just done.
All right, fair
and
enough.
And I am not. No. I am giving you the facts that has been presented to the country, and you are coming.
But there may be other facts that you do not have, and therefore you may be premature.
Speculation.
You may well be premature in saying what a bad deal the man has been given.
Speculation again. Come to the facts.
What we need more than anything else, sir, is this. I am among the people in the country who felt that the cabinet was too large. I sat here with the development of the COVID pandemic, and I felt that reinforced that the cabinet was too large.
But let me put
the issue here is not just this. You can get involved in the personalities as much as you like, but at the end of it all, the question is, what are the savings to the people of the taxpayers of Barbados?
Well, let me come to you now, Danny. Let me come to you if you're going to put that to me. You, therefore, according to what you have just said, you have kicked a senior ministers on the back bench and you have put young people up front ahead of them. When these that you
call
put
that,
in the back,
you know what you call that?
Let me speak. I've just let you spoke.
Fair enough.
Here you have. You have experience that you have now kicked to the curb. And you have now brought persons that are now let me say, getting their feet wet, when they are, should be now be groomed, you have taken those who should be doing the grooming and kicked them to the back. So what you are saying does not mesh with me.
Okay.
You can't make no sense.
All right, but let me respond to that by, first of all, putting to you the concept of succession planning. You've recognized that these are older people who have been in the political game for a long time. And if you want continuity, the other angle to that is that you look for new people to put them in a position to take the country forward and to learn the ropes. You don't have to be sitting as a minister to help guide a young person who is on the front bench or in cabinet. You don't have to be sitting as a minister to do that. Because you have had all of those years, you can speak to that person behind the scenes and you can guide and influence them in a positive way. So I don't understand your argument that you have to sit in cabinet to do that.
Well, you see, you're not going to understand what I'm saying because then you don't want to see what I'm saying. So therefore...
No, I understand you.
Here you are.
I got you good. I got you covered. I understand your motive today.
Let me point this out to you. Now, I want to disabuse your mind and other persons like you, like your mind, by...
Deal with me because I'm the one taking you on this.
And I'm going to put a fact to you.
Let me hear it.
And if you can deny it, you deny it. You have heard Mr. Payne say that when it was being talked about that this might have been his last term, he said himself that he will not resign until he see White Hill being fixed. Do you remember him saying that?
I don't remember.
Oh, you don't remember that?
White Hill fixed?
Now, listen to me. Hear this. I am saying that to disabuse people's mind, including yours, that he is going out. Here's a man said he's not, his intent is not to leave politics until what
he never said he's going out. I said to you that you need to take into consideration that while he's out of the cabinet, it is quite possible that he may be doing something else. I don't know what it is.
But let me finish. How could you have a man like him with the experience that he had and the support that he has given to the government and to the Prime Minister, who is now, will not, in fact, he will not be in a position now
to do what?
To press for what to be done in White Hill. Don't start yet. Let me show you why I'm saying that. You heard him said on the floor of the Parliament already. And I heard him say, when he was very critical, when money was given to do other things, and he said himself, you probably don't listen to all these debates. And he was very concerned that nothing in the estimate was mentioned for White Hill. Do you remember him saying that? Not a word. And he said he is concerned that all of this money has done for other things, and White Hill has not been mentioned at all.
I thought that when I went and I looked at the Senate, I saw a young doctor, someone in the Senate, who I believe has been one of those seen as a possible BLP choice for St. Andrew. And I thought that that had a lot to do with the fact that George Payne is in the evening of his political career. That's what I thought.
Well, just clear up that.
So he's not in the evening of his political career? So you're trying to tell me, because I know White Hill well.
I've done
a project on White Hill and had geologists and everything in there. So that means he would never leave. Because no matter what you do with White Hill, the road is eroded. He would never leave politics then, because that road will forever need fixing.
Now, why are you diverting from the fact that... Ms. Ellis, don't do this to me. Why are you diverting from the fact that I just laid out before you?
But it cannot be White Hill alone. A man can't hinge whether he stays in politics on a road alone, a road that always eroding.
But it has been a major problem. I got you covered, man.
I know today is a historic day.
Let me finish off by telling you this. If I were a member or a constituency member in St. Andrew,
you would resign.
No, I won't resign.
What you do?
I will walk to every house in St. Andrew and I will have a petition signed. No, I'm serious. You're laughing.
I know you're serious.
Listen to me. I'll tell you this. I am upset.
Now we understand why you put in some support behind George.
No, but I am upset about it because when I see that man, when I see what he has done for to support the Prime Minister, I am concerned. And I don't know why you would.
So let me tell you something. Let me ask you something.
I don't know what you're
saying. If the issue, as you have characterized it, is between him and the Prime Minister, with his constituents getting the picture then, that they got to be part signing a petition. You say it's between he and the Prime Minister?
No. Don't come with that story. You know better than that. Don't come with that. Because when you have removed him, when he would have been in a position to even enhance the very constituency that he's in, where how could he enhance that now? Tell me. He could go and beg somebody.
If I listen to what was said in the last election campaign, I suspect you didn't go in St. Andrew, you didn't hear, or Orange Hill, or any of those places, so to hear. Let me finish with the point I'm making now. Please, you're getting all riled up. But if I had listened to the person who was representing the Democratic Labour Party in that election campaign, I don't think that what you have said about his contribution and commitment would have been matched by what they were saying. How come that miss you?
Why would you see how you would try to distract and divert? But I am not going to.
You can't answer me.
No, I can't.
Because this is the first time that I hear you off of the party script.
Listen to me. It isn't I can't answer you, but I refuse to be diverted.
All right.
You know why? You have no turned that man into a beggar.
Oh my goodness! You are being outrageous. Have a good day, man. You know? That is being outrageous. How you could turn somebody into a beggar?